All right, this is the magic moment. We're going to take your phone calls next with John Hoag on Coast to Coast AM. John, were there ever any similarities between the late great prophet Edgar Cayce and Nostradamus?
Well, they both were healers. They both had trouble with the establishment with their healing. Edgar Cayce tried to create, was sometimes caught as a person who was not certified to do healing or give medical advice, because, of course, he went to a trance and gave his advice, and most of the things he did in trance was to help heal people. Nostradamus, for a time, was a rather renegade doctor who, there's even some question whether he was a full-fledged physician or just an apothecary. Of course, in my book on his life, I tried to explain how, you know, the some of that criticism is a bit of a 21st century bias that doesn't really look at what physicians and apothecaries were like. There was a lot more loose and open definition of these healers. So they shared that. They shared the fact that they both made dated predictions on occasion. Edgar Cayce even made many more than Nostradamus, and a lot of them were very accurate, as some of Nostradamus' prophecies that date the future were very accurate, and probably more amazing because they looked like in years. Here he is in 1555 talking about the year 1792 as a time when religion would be in trouble, and the people, common people, would take down their king in France. Both these things happened, the crisis of the church basically being dismantled during the French Revolution. First Republic was created around 1792. It's one thing to be Edgar Cayce making a prediction about 20 years or 5 years into the future. Here's a man making dated predictions for 4.5 centuries.
Exactly.
The most amazing being 1999, 7 months, or sept mois, which about a great king of terror descending from the skies. 1999, since nothing happened on the seventh month of 1999, which would be July, that's one way to interpret it. Another way is that sept mois means September month. And the way he left it open in the grammar, it could be interpreted that way. So we know something did happen, terror coming out of the skies, in September month of 2001. Now, if you take 1999 and reverse it to 9111, which is a kind of number anagram game, mm-hmm. you get September 11th, 01, September month.
Do you see anything in 2008 of any terrorism or what it could be?
Well, in the book, Predictions for 2008, which is a downloadable ebook on my website, I looked at that, and conventional wisdom would say that we are going to have some kind of terrorist event. If it happens, it's probably going to be a whole lot smaller than what was committed in September 11th, but it might have an even greater impact because of the country being so much more shocked by that. I figured if it did happen, it would be something like a sniper's mall shooting or a bombing similar to what happened in London. But my sense is that Osama bin Laden is not really strategically thinking about hitting us as much as he wants to hit Europe, mainly to try to, and will unsuccessfully try to separate America from its allies, like it did getting the Spanish out of Iraq by bombing the Madrid train stations. I think Osama bin Laden hopes that he can suddenly divide the alliance against America and Afghanistan. Well, my bigger concern is that what he's going to do to Pakistan in 2008, which could... The thing about 2008, George, is that we're going to have many mornings where we wake up to the world changed in this coming year. You know, things will happen. I mean, even before it happened, we had Benazir Bhutto assassinated, and how that just threw the whole situation in Pakistan into a whole new chaotic situation. We're having the situation since then in this year with the collapse of the housing industry, home loans. This is the year where big, big revolutionary upheaval and change starts, and we're in it for the next 36 years. And in the book, I try to explain how it's actually divided into two 18-year periods. I was talking about in predictive astrology, we had the Pluto-Capricorn transit. Last time that happened was when the American Revolution and the Declaration of Independence was created. And it reached the revolution and the revolutionary thoughts of those days, which led to our country and our Constitution, had to process through a chaotic passage through Pluto's passage through the sign of Aquarius, which is from revolutions planned and declared to revolutions pursued on the streets, in the fields, by mass uprisings of people. The American Revolution, we profited from that by winning it during planning it in Capricorn's transit of Pluto, winning it in the Aquarian version of Pluto's transit. But one has to caution that Pluto's transit through Aquarius last time also led to the bloodiness of the French Revolution. So we are entering revolutionary times, and hopefully we have the destiny to make the timeline a Jeffersonian revolution for America, one that's done constitutionally, that will actually see the Constitution updated around 2026, right at the exact year that Pluto moves out of Capricorn and into Aquarius.
All right, to the phones we go. Let's go to our wild card line. Hi there.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. Thank you.
I wanted to ask you about a video I seen years back called The Man Who Saw Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not sure if you're really familiar with it, but it was about Nostradamus.
Yes.
And his quatrains.
Yes, it was in 1982. It was, I think, one of the finest documentaries I've seen.
Very much
and it
so.
And it was Orson Welles who was the host.
Yes, that's it. Well, in one of his final quatrains, he said that the third Antichrist would rise in the Eastern world wearing a blue turban. And I was wondering what your input on that was, and could the Antichrist, you know, you spoke of, what was that M word, Mustafar?
Mabus.
Mabus.
Yeah.
Could all of them that you named be, like, all together as far as an Antichrist? And the third thing is, Bin Laden supposedly had dialysis of the liver, and I don't know if he's still alive
kidney,
or what.
Kidney.
Yeah, the kidney.
It's possible.
Yeah. Well, I think he's alive. I'm not so sure he will be alive after 2008, but I think that there'll also be an attack into Pakistan, but I don't think they'll catch him because he will move deeper into Pakistan if he's there, because basically a lot of Pakistan is becoming the new Taliban region, unfortunately. That brings up a whole interesting and dangerous situation, one of those wake up in the mornings change situations where you wake up to Pakistan is now is Islamic fundamentalist state, and it has 50 atomic bombs. And India is next door, and one of the scenarios that India prepares for, kind of the doomsday scenario, is that if Pakistani government is overtaken by Islamist extremists, they may preempt an attack, even nuclear attack, on Pakistan to save themselves. Of course, the danger with that is the winds do not blow the fallout away from India. Anything you lob at Pakistan becomes instant karma for India as nuclear fallout. So hopefully the nature will prevent this unthinkable act and something can be sorted out in another way. Now, to answer your questions, one of the fragments there is that yes, the Antichrist could be several people. Nostradamus had this problem as he went into the distant future from his point of view of seeing one thing that was actually more than one thing. His predictions about the invasion of France, which if you separate the lines and look at them from historical perspectives, the maneuvers and military advances that he's talking about a German invasion of France, are actually superimposed the two invasions of 1914 and 1940. And I describe that in detail in my book that looked at the complete examinations of Nostradamus' prophecies called Nostradamus, the Complete Prophecies, which I produced in 1997. So composite number of people being the St. Mabus, that's very possible. In Nostradamus, we have this assumption, people at least are just automatically predisposed to believe in Nostradamus, seem to think that he's all-seeing and all-powerful and is not as blinded by his own expectations and fears and hopes as anybody else. He certainly, I think, was beyond a lot of them, but not completely free of them. And anyway, even if he were, we're talking about potentials unborn, timelines that have not come into the true reality of the present. And they can, as I said a few hours ago when we started this talk, and they are being changed even now as you are listening to me talk about certain possible futures. Yes, that's one part of it. I think I've, at this late hour, I've forgotten the first part of your question.
Well, that's good enough. Let's take a few more calls. First-time caller, you're on with John Hogue. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Christina, and I'm just across the sound. I'm in Port Angeles, Washington.
Okay, Christina, thanks for calling.
Is it snowing there yet?
Pardon?
Is it snowing there?
It's melting. Well, it's not snowing, I don't think, at the moment, but it has been snowing, and it may snow in the future, so you'll be the first to know. John, I'm calling because I noticed when I read your website, you were one of the things that you mentioned context of a larger story is the Cuban Missile Crisis and the Cold War. And a lot of people in our generation, I think I'm a year older than you are, and I emailed you a couple of years ago. We're right about in that same generation. And I remember the whole, segment, there's a whole segment of the baby boom generation that experienced that. For me, it was like really terrifying, and I think it was for a lot of us. Maybe some of us remember more clearly, and we're more sensitive and tuned into that, what was going on, and others maybe weren't. I know I talked with my brother a couple of weeks ago, and I was just telling him, I feel in some ways I haven't felt like this since that period in time. It was just like a brief kind of thing. I was curious if you have any resonance with that and how you look at these cycles, these 36-year cycles and other cycles that you might have looked at.
I was very young when that happened, and that was the first, in a way, the Cuban Missile Crisis was what happened to me is something that's happened very rare, but it's something, as you speak about resonance, that I think a lot of people have felt. Certainly, they felt it with 9/11. I felt it as a child. I remember my folks were going to go to Las Vegas. I lived in L.A. in those days. I must have been, I was very young, but aware enough to remember that when they were going, to see Frank Sinatra, and they'd heard that the president, Jack Kennedy, was going to show up there. So they went to see the Rat Pack, And they were going to take a plane, a turboprop, and I had this sudden horrid premonition that went through my whole body that my mother and father were going to die in the crash. Mm-hmm. And that's what I put on it as a little child. That's, what was the center of my world. But the strange thing that happened many years later, on September 10th, 2001, is I was absolutely overwhelmed by a premonition coming deep in my belly and resonating out of my body that I really felt, am I going to die? Or something really huge is overhanging on me. I felt like a little insect that was about to be crushed by something. And then as I went deeper into it, I realized that it was transpersonal. It wasn't about me. It was something big for the world. And when I asked what it was, this oracle thing in me just said, be prepared. Something big is about to happen. I had guests over. I told them to leave. I did things I've never done before. I told people to get out. I had to be alone. It was really serious. And then I went, after a fitful time, I went to sleep for a few hours. And then I had the strangest dream of hearing my agent at the time, who's an to Australia, and I hear this Australian voice in my dreams saying, John, John, wake up, you got to wake up, it's happening. And my office is next door to my bedroom, and it's a thin wall, so I kept hearing that, and then I heard a phone ringing, and when I woke up, I actually realized it wasn't a dream, that he was really on the phone, and he's run into the place, pick up the answering machine, and he's saying, it's happened, the thing you've been talking about for 10, 15 years, they've attacked the two towers, they've attacked New York, it's a terrorist attack. And so I then ran out from there, turned on the TV just in time to see the second plane hit the South Tower. And I went, my God, I'm seeing a prophecy that I've been writing about, trying to understand, like we've been trying to work out who Mabus is. Well, this other detective story, which started in 1983 with articles I wrote as far back then, was trying to find out, piece together the clues that looked at an attack on New York City as some kind of Pearl Harbor event around the turn of the millennium that would trigger the war of the Antichrist that lasts either 27 years or 25 years. And so anyway, that premonition is there. I don't have that for our times now, but it's lurking. It is definitely lurking. Big things are coming.
Sadly, I think. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with John Hoag. Hi there.
Hello, this is Evan from Pittsburgh.
Hello, Evan. Go ahead.
Good evening, George. Good evening, John.
Hello, Evan.
Just had two comments. The first one's going to be quick. Tonight on the State of the Union address, I don't know if any of you happen to catch, but Barack Obama appeared to have aged already. I know that there's a big myth, I don't know if it's a myth or not, of the presidents appearing to age faster over their term. I just happened to notice that. But the second thing, something you, John, you had said to the last caller, just punched me in the stomach, because on September 10th, I was 15 years old at the time. I broke down into tears, and I didn't know why. It was a panic attack of all panic attacks, and I felt the exact same thing you had felt.
Yes, that's...
I kept exclaiming to my mother, you know, something horrible is going to happen. I don't know what, something big, something bad. Well, the next day we found out. But,
I would just simply interject, Aaron, it is like a panic attack, this energy, but a little more profound. And I have had so many people since 9/11. I've been putting a study together to see how many people had a similar experience. We are interconnected. And more than that, from on a human level, we are interconnected with the whole cosmos. The key is, when is it our projections from our minds and egos, and when is it really something that is beyond that, transpersonalizing that, beyond the personal, beyond the personality? All I can say is, from those two experiences now, I have a feeling of being able to read which is the real stuff and which is my projection.
Stay with us. We'll be back with final phone calls with John Hoag on Coast to Coast AM. A fast night, isn't it? Well, we'll be back. We'll take final phone calls with John Hoag on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, John, before we wrap up with final calls, take a few moments and tell us more about the e-book and how people can get it.
Yes, it's an electronic book. It's you download it as a PDF download, and it's at my website, the Hoag Prophecy Store at hoagprophecy.com, and it's called Predictions for 2008, and it looks at the future of the weather, the economy, politics, the long new trends in the next 36 years, as well as things to look out for as the scales of the great time clock tip towards a new age. And you just go on the website, you can see it on the home page, just click on the cover, and it'll take you to a page that will describe it, give a free sample of prophecies, and there you can purchase it for $10.80.
Excellent. Is there anything looming out there that concerns you, John?
Oh, God, where to begin?
I thought so.
Yeah, I mean, what concerns me, something we haven't talked about tonight that definitely concerns me is that we are not, we do not have 10 years to change our behavior with fossil fuels and curtail global warming. We're already a few years past the tipping point in 2005. And in the book, I look at the indications of those tipping points already happening. We've already had the carbon sink of the tundra now releasing more methane than ever before. We've had, since 2005, the parts per million levels that even the most conservative scientists who see that global warming is happening thought we wouldn't reach for another 10 years. That was the key to the tipping point theory that we had 10 years. That, since November of last year when the findings came out from 3,000 scientists that were looking at it, and the United Nations has concluded that that level of greenhouse gas that we're putting into the atmosphere has already been cleared a couple years ago. So, you know, the fact that the current in the Atlantic Gulf Stream current seemed to have stopped last December and started again, the fact that the climate is doing very strange and violent things, it's the biggest thing before us. If there's anything that's going to overthrow the economy overnight, it's not the games we play with what we think is value and currency. It's a climate going out of control. It is a situation that could happen at any moment where a significant amount of Greenland or Antarctica melts, and within a year we have 16 to 20 foot rise in the oceans, which could happen, as I predicted, as far back as 94. It's not going to happen at the end of the 21st century. I said it might happen, if we're lucky, in the 2040s, but it could even happen in the 2020s. And now science, unfortunately, is catching up with that prediction, and because they have more data to deal with, see, it's much more runaway than we had before. And just imagine, people, we live in a very fragile situation. If our ports were flooded, no one would drown. But if the ports of the world were inundated by 16 to 20 feet of water, it would disrupt food production, food transport, and 3-4 billion people would starve in 1 year. We are a system of, we are a society, is a global society, whether we like it or not, that is rooted on very fragile super systems that if one is disrupted, causes a cascade through the entire situation. Now, I hope we don't have to actually see these cascades happen before we get smarter about how to manage the Earth. But if we don't get smarter, these things are going to come at us in the next 6 years. In fact, they're going to come much sooner. They're starting to come now. So I'm looking for more shocking tipping points, more revelations about our climate. And I'm hopeful that I'm seeing all sides of the political debate begin to at least talk about climate change and the things we need to do to change and to make different industries. I'm happy to see the Republicans and the Democrats and independents talk about this. And hopefully talk will soon become action, and all the demagoguery of we can change and we can will get into we can do what, you know, tell us. You know, what is it we have to change and not just fly off on our emotions? And I think that the climate is going to slap us in the face and get us out of being emotional and get grounded and find out that we're in a bigger crisis than our grandparents' experience called World War II. That was still localized and regional. This is a global crisis. There is no safe place on the planet from it. We have to face this enemy, which is created by the fundamental enemy of humanity since time immemorial. Our stupidity is our greatest enemy, and we need to start thinking intelligently. We need to see with 2008 the beginning of the end of our childhood and become an adult human race and manage the Earth rather than exploit it to the point of our own extinction.
To the phones we go. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Hey, first-time caller. Glad to be on the show. Loved it. Listen to it all the time.
Likewise. Thanks for calling.
I had a couple quick comments regarding the Antichrist. I know that the scriptures indicate that he will come from Syria, north of Israel. Isaiah called him the Assyrian. That's the region north and even a little bit eastward into western Iraq, which is also the location that is going to bring forth the Islamic Mahdi, the guided one of Islam, or you've probably heard him referred to as the 12th Imam.
Yes.
This is the same location that brought forth Nimrod and Antiochus Epiphanes of Syria, who destroyed the Temple Mount and whatnot. But Daniel gives us an incredible insight and to his physical attributes. Daniel, chapter 7, verse 20, tells us that he'll be a large man, larger than his associates. It's the Hebrew word rahab, and it means larger, more lengthy, upright, a tall man, like Saul was kind of a head taller than the rest.
How about a stocky man?
Yeah, a stout, more stout than his fellows, right.
And sounds then, like Muqtada al-Sadr. But if I might interject quickly, because it's interesting about the Assyrian context, but I wrote extensively about the Islamic view of the apocalypse in because it is like the Jewish view and the Judeo-Christian view of the underpinnings of this three-way collision that may end up in a war with Iran in this year, despite the fact that politically speaking, it seems almost impossible for America, for the Bush administration to do this. Plan B is the trump card is that Israel will do it, and that will pull America to defend Israel against Iran, and that's how, through the back door, we have a conflict that widens, not diminishes. It'll be left, the wreckage will be left for the next president to sort out. The thing is about the appearance of the 12th Imam, which for your listeners is the 12th descendant of the first caliph, who was a direct descendant bloodline to Muhammad's family. The division, the schism in Islam is between, I'm making this very simplistic almost, but forgive me, but it's really a division between those who believe that the direct bloodline, sort of like Roseline and the Holy Grail, it's an Islamic version of that, that the direct bloodline to Muhammad has a closer connection to Allah and being the caliph, the leader of the Ummah, which is the community of all believers across the world of Islam, wherever country they're in. There are people who follow that. There are other people who are the people of the way, the path, the sunnah, the Sunni, who believe that it, a wise man chosen, it doesn't have to be a direct bloodline of Muhammad. Now, the place Samarra, the Golden Mosque that was blown up, which started the civil war in Iraq, really was a triggering point in early 2006. Samarra is the place where the 12th Imam, who has disappeared, he is occulted. That means in the story is he vanished, and he is in some state, altered state, and he will reappear. And this is the place where he vanished and where he's going to reappear. And unfortunately for the theory about the biblical theory you're expounding, Samarra is not actually in the Assyrian area. It's a little farther south, closer to Baghdad. It's close, but I mean, it's just to... There's an opening to interpretation with that. But Muqtada al-Sadr, who's a big, burly, looks like a linebacker, is a man who believes he is paving the way for the Mahdi. In fact, his Mahdi army is called that, his militia, because it's trained to be available for the 12th Imam to reappear, the Mahdi, and lead this army to a march on Jerusalem, which has to be taken back in the Islamic apocalypse. Now, Al-Quds, which is the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Shias of the Persians, the Farsis in Iran, Al-Quds is the name in Islam for Jerusalem. So, there's this, even Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, always starts every public meeting speech with a prayer to the imminent return of the Mahdi, which, our mainstream press just doesn't have a clue about that. They never talk about that. So these people feel they are agents to prepare for the Mahdi, just as equally it's not being reported in Israel. A lot of people, including the government, believe they're preparing the way for the real Messiah, not the false one we've been worshiping in the West for 2,000 years, but the real Messiah who is imminently coming. You add to that people who are every Sunday morning at breakfast, some of the most staunch doomsday apocalypse evangelicals, Hagee and others who breakfast with the current president, are constantly praying and influencing him that he is the president of the apocalyptic times. So you have this three-way fever of apocalypticism that, if it isn't exposed and looked at with some more centering and reason, it is going to lead three countries into trying to self-fulfill a prophecy that will destroy all three countries.
International Line, you're on with John Hogue. Hello.
Oh, hello, George and John.
Hi.
Hello. Yeah, I'm Carlo from Ottawa in Canada. I have been living here from 5 years. I'm originally from Cuba. And since you was talking about this being a revolutionary time, I was wondering if, as a consequence also, we're going to be understanding in a certain way how we are perceived through our actions in Latin American countries. Because it's kind of a difficult thing for the United States to know objectivity in terms of how Latin America conducts, they deal with the United States and stuff. And since what you are talking about these revolutionary times also goes to the fact that we try to find a kind of a particle of a truth of what is exactly the politics and stuff. My question is exactly, could we count on the awakening of American public in order to looking for information, not only biased by the media, but also even going to the countries and trying to really check on the reality and try to demystify whatever kind of brainwashing we have been receiving all these years?
Well, I guess it's boy, where to begin? Because we could do a whole show just on this. And the prophetic significance of perception of this country and its people, which even though we have been a superpower, we still are basically homebodies, a Cancerian country born under the sign of Cancer. Really, if we followed our true desires, we would stay home and just deal with our immediate lives and be out of the rest of the world's business. But destiny has this ironic cause that has sent us into being a superpower, an unwilling superpower as a people. But unfortunately, we look at the world with an isolationist point of view. And whenever we do this, it has always led us to military and political disasters because we anticipate what the world sees and does from a point of view that is completely not what the world sees and does in their own corners of the world. I feel fortunate, as I know from my own experience, Barack Obama feels fortunate that he grew up and experienced other cultures and had, in even more so, the direct interaction of his father being from Kenya. I often think that if his presidency is timed right, his own... I disagree with Hillary Clinton. His stuff that happened to him when he was in his early teens was definitely formative, and I think a president who has lived some time in the third world and lived in other developing countries is going to have a lot more compassion and understanding and cut through the BS, if you will, of American isolationism to forge and bridge South America, the Western Hemisphere, East, everywhere. And so I see that in Obama, if he could just wait and get a little more seasoned, I see him as a president who is not only a black man, but a belongs to the ethnic demographic of the future of humanity, what has been called in prophecy the race of tan. That is where eventually, as the world becomes global, all races will intermix into one race, and this is the race that Blavatsky had foreseen. It's the race of Homo Novus, the new humanity. And in a way, Barack Obama is perhaps, if he becomes president in the future, will be the first representative of that new ethnic demographic, where he gains the best of both cultures in his life, and that just can only enrich his leadership if he can wait to mature to that leadership.
We'll squeeze in one more quick call. West of the Rockies. Hi there.
Hi, George. Thanks for hanging in there for us.
Sure.
A question for your guest. In light of the recent UFO sighting in Texas, if your guest had any comments, predictions on UFO sightings and disclosure.
Okay, very good. 1 minute, John.
Okay. Whenever there's evolutionary crisis on the human condition, there's always major UFO flaps. It takes no Nostradamus to predict that, and we're definitely going to see a lot more happening with that. But I still think that these extraterrestrial civilizations will wait for us to discover them by our means, not by theirs. So look for that discovery by the middle of the next decade when we pick up the artificial light of nearby worlds with our bigger telescopes. If you want to prove the existence of ET, lobby your senators and Congress, women and men, to finance major space telescopes.
And John Hoag's prediction, Hillary Clinton, the next president of the United States, right?
Right.
Right, very good. John, thanks for being on the program. As always, you are refreshing, my friend, and you take care of yourself.
You too, and get well.
I will take care of that fever as we continue to pound away. That's John Hoag. His website, hoagprophecy.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. If you need to email me, you can do that just as simply at george@coasttocoastam.com as well. And don't forget, those of you in the Los Angeles area, I'm going to be at the Conscious Life Expo on February 9th. So come on out and say hello. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.